shoot some pool down there. You can act a fool down there. You can play it cool down there. At the Bama Breeze, you can drink some beer down there. Argue, laugh, and cheer down there. Pass another year down there. Jimmy got caught smoking a joint out behind the bar, sitting in his car. And they took.
Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by SeatGeek. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here with my co-host, Justin Pennick. And we have a special co-host, the football grump of the Just Giants podcast. Last podcast, down at Senior Bowl week, we are on a couch. A fun week of practice. You know, we're going to get into the Mike Kafka stuff. You know, Giants defensive coordinator, and we have an interview with Oregon offensive lineman Jackson Powers Johnson, who, you know, we interviewed. Obviously, and the Giants got to talk with him about moving the guard. So, fun episode. Justin, how you doing?
I am not doing great.
Because we're leaving in Alabama.
Because we're leaving Alabama. It might sound like I have something perpetually at the back of my throat this episode. The postseason and Alabama have defeated me, but we had a great week, we got a lot done, and I'm glad the football grump is here so I don't have to say as many words this episode.
I can do plenty of talking for you.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm not sick. I didn't get sunburnt too bad this year, just a little bit on the nose and ears, so I'm feeling pretty good. I love coming down here.
Yeah, fun week. Very fun week. We got a lot accomplished.
Everything went perfect, too. Like, the weather was great, yeah. And we got, like, better access this year, and all of our stuff went out, like, quicker and better, so it was really fun.
Yeah, fun. I'm already excited to come back down next year. So we're going to get into all of it, but we got to talk about Kafka being, officially back, and then the Giants defensive coordinator search. First, this episode was brought to you by some special people. David Mangano. He's a Graham Gano's man. Jeffrey Graham. That's actually Billy Graham's grandson, the grandson. And then just Jacob, who's part of the world beater tier. Justin, who are these Jacob Grahams?
Grump, do you know where they went?
They went to patreon.com, where they signed up.
/talking giants,
yeah, of course. Where they subscribed and they got free stickers and things like that, right?
Which, again, some people have used to put on the Dunkin' Donuts in Mobile, Alabama, which is rough. So make sure to
join. Rough.
Which is good. But people did ask. We had a couple high note people send us, be like, yeah. Hey, I saw your stickers at the Dunkin' Donuts in Mobile, Alabama. And I told them we're trying to get to the bottom of this. So let's get into this episode, guys. Before we get into all the Senior Bowl stuff, we do got to talk about some Giants related stuff. Mike Kafka is returning per Jordan Renan. He went through the head coach search with the Seahawks, got a second interview, was supposedly like a real candidate for them. They ended up signing Mike McDonald. Justin, I mean, we've been under the impression since the season's over that like Mike Kafka wanted to leave, right? And every time we'd ask people, they said, yeah, he's probably going to be gone. He wants to leave. So everyone said he was leaving, though nothing, but they never said like it's confirmed, like they're just working on getting it done. Nothing was official. So basically, it seems like Kafka wanted to go, but not go. He wasn't going to be like immature and force his way out like Wink Martindale did, which I do respect Kafka a lot for that. But Tuesday, Justin, we were here and we finally got somebody, you know, within the Giants. We asked, like, what's going to happen with Kafka? And they said, they're not going to let, and I feel like the word let is very key in that, let him interview for a lateral job. So the Giants are going to keep Mike Kafka at offensive coordinator, a decision I like. But to me, it comes down to, does Brian Daboll call plays? Because if Brian Daboll is calling plays, I feel like he should have let Mike Kafka go and, you know, look for a job that he would have had that opportunity. Because he came here under the impression he was calling plays. He left the Chiefs to be the offensive coordinator here to call plays. He went with someone that he had never coached with before into a whole new regime, learned a different playbook to call plays. And I think Mike Kafka is a good play caller. You know, some of their better games were when he was calling plays, including like with Tommy DeVito. So I really hope Mike Kafka calls plays. And if Brian Daboll decides that he's calling the plays, then he needs to stick with it. But I just don't want someone here that's just here for one more year because they're under contract for another year.
Yeah, my impression throughout this whole time, I mean, you can even go back a couple weeks, while I never, like, doubted, you know, what you were hearing and all the people that you were asking, I thought that Kafka was going to stay, and the only way that he was going to leave was if he was going to get a head coaching job. And I don't think he's ready.
He shouldn't be getting a head coaching job.
No. I really don't think he's ready, and I did not think that the Giants were going to let him kind of take that lateral jump. The one thing that we haven't figured out, Bobby, and the one thing that we haven't heard, we've gotten clarity on the relationship between Wink Martindale and Brian Daboll and why that's a little tense. We never really figured out why the relationship between Daboll and Kafka got to a point where Daboll took away play calling. So maybe it is the fact that...
I don't think it has to do with, like, attitude. I think it just Daboll wanted to call the plays, which is fine, but just take the play calling and call the plays.
But, like, there has to be a reason why. I mean, and that's the... But there has to be a reason, well, why did it get to the point where Daboll felt like he needed to take the control back of that? I don't think Kafka's ready to be a head coach, but I'm also, at the same time, glad that he's here because I do feel that he is an advantage. I hope they can figure it out together.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of success, in the passing game in 2022, in the run game. This year went sideways for a numerous amount of reasons, but I do think he's like a smart young coach in the NFL who is on the up and would get an offensive coordinator job somewhere else if given the opportunity. But I want him to call the plays, though, because if he doesn't call the plays, then he's gone next year, right? Because that's when, you would assume – He was under a 3-year contract. He would go, and he's just going to go at that point, anyways. So, like, if that's the case where you don't want to call in plays, then I would like Brian Daboll to go out and get a new offensive coordinator that maybe doesn't let him call plays year one, but molds him into that point. Like even Davis Webb, the QB coach for the Broncos, we know he spent a lot of year with Daboll, knows the Daboll offense like crazy, and the Broncos like really really like him. Go get him to be your offensive coordinator with the understanding of, hey, you're not calling plays this year, but if everything goes right, you can have that opportunity next year. So, again, let Kafka call plays.
Let me ask you this straight up. Gun to your head right now. Do you think Mike Kafka is calling plays next year?
No, because, the rumors have been that, Daboll wants to take more control of it. He took control of offensive meetings in the year, which I am fine with that, right? Like, hey, you're an offensive head coach. Take control of the meeting. It is your offense. Put your stamp on it. But at the same time, I would like our head coach to be doing the actual head coaching and handling all sides, right? We're going to have a new defensive coordinator here. Being able to handle that, handle all the day-to-day stuff. I think Daboll can call plays and be head coach. A lot of the best head coaches in the NFL do that. But what they also don't do is bring in somebody new that you're not familiar with and basically kind of shun them.
What do you think? Gun to your head. Is Mike Kafka calling plays?
I think he does.
Yeah, I think so,
too. I think they figure it out.
I mean, I have nothing else to base this on other than my gut, is that originally he was brought in here. He was brought in to call the plays. As far as we know, he called all the plays in 2022. My opinion is that 2023 started the spiral for Brian Daboll. They went 6 quarters where they didn't score a single point. And I think that it reached a point where he felt like he needed to take control of the situation. Not necessarily anything that Mike Kafka was doing. His whole operation was falling apart right in front of him. And you can't go 0-2 in the NFL, especially against a shitty Arizona team. Yep. So I honestly think that that's where it started. And, I don't think that it should be given back and taken away again or anything like that. But
yeah, 3 different times that happened.
I agree. I'm not going to argue that. That's definitely bad for his confidence. It's not good for your operation. There's no continuity whatsoever. But I do think that a lot of the things that went into it was the quarterback injuries. The offensive line was not performing whatsoever. And I think that he felt like in order to not let the season get completely out of control, he needed to take control. And, need becomes want because you're in control. You can take control. So I do think that when you have a whole other offseason to get started, I don't think that Brian Daboll wants that to be his organization because it wasn't the organization that he put together when he put everything together in 2022. So my gut feeling, I have nothing to base it on other than that. My gut feeling is that Mike Kafka calls plays next year.
We're actually watching Mike Kafka celebrate a Shrine Bowl win. Is he the greatest Shrine Bowl coach of all time? So basically this offseason needs to be spent like working out, not this relationship, because I really don't think it's personal.
No, I don't
think so. Between Daboll and Kafka. I really think it had to do with the results on the field. But hey, this is what I expect. This is the plan I want. If it isn't met, I will strip play calling, and I will call the plays, and that will be the end of it. Or I'll either have you ride out the year, or I will just fire you as an offensive coordinator and promote Shea Tierney. So hopefully all that gets figured out. But I believe in Kafka. I really think he's going to be a good coach in the NFL. And I think he showed some good evidence of that year one, year two. Again, got away from them. I think they got a little too confident in what they could be early on, and then, you know, were able to, you know, they had a bad offense all year, but they were able to make Tommy DeVito look serviceable, right?
Yeah.
Like Tyrod Taylor honestly played some of his better ball of his career, was pushing the ball downfield more than they want. This offense is begging for explosive element to it, and I think they're going to hopefully work to get that taken care of. Next that we got to talk about, Denard Wilson, the Ravens DB coach, one of the Giants DC candidates, took the defensive coordinator job with the Titans. That was not expected, but, you know, there was an idea that Denard Wilson would go somewhere else. Bobby Babich, was our number two guy. The Bills hired him. We kind of thought that might happen. The Bills needed a defensive coordinator, so they upgrade him. So that Joe Shane's told the Giants reporters down here in Mobile, Alabama, that they should have it figured out by the end of the week. Well, you were listening to this on Friday. Maybe you know by now. But that leaves left Jerome Henderson, the DB coach, the Titans defensive coordinator Shane Bowen, Chargers defensive coordinator Derek Ansley, the Dolphins linebacker coach Anthony Campanelli, and then the Chiefs D-line coach Brendan Daly. But from Joe Shane's comments, you would think Brendan Daly is not really a part of the equation. It's just, it becomes a lot harder to get your pick of the crop in year three with your seat hotter, coming off of a bad divorce with your, you know, defensive coordinator Wink Martindale, than year one where you are aligned with the GM. It's a fresh start. You guys are building something together. Justin, who do you think ends up being the defensive coordinator?
Jerome Henderson, right? It feels like it's really headed towards that.
Yeah, I just feel like if they really want it to be Jerome Henderson, I feel like we would kind of have that news by now. But he is my favorite for it, right? Now, I do think the Titans defensive coordinator Shane Bowen is being a little underrated in this because the Titans defense wasn't good the last year and a half. But, like, he's always had a top run defense in the NFL. Every single that he's been there, he's had a just top five overall defense 1 year. And then the other 2 years, you know, they were top half of the league in scoring and a little below average and, like, in stuff like EPA per play. You know, but at the same time, he is a coordinator who I think with good players is going to be good, with average players going to be average, and then bad players will be bad while also being able to stop the run. But, you know, like, those numbers are better than, like, Jerome Henderson with passing. You know, the passing EPA since he's been with the Giants has been 17th in yards. It's been 19th, 14th, 15th, 17th yards per attempt, 18th, 14th, 5th, and 17th. So those aren't great numbers, but we know Jerome Henderson. We know Jerome Henderson's a good coach, what he's been able to get out of young DBs, you know, journeyman DBs, and then just good players like James Bradbury, Adoree Jackson, Xavier McKinney, you know, Jabril Peppers, Logan Ryan, you know, being able to get the most out of those guys, giving those guys career years, and then making guys like Fabian Moreau look serviceable, Isaac Yadam, you know, helping with the growth of Deontay Banks, you know, making Darnay Holmes, you know, fit in a zone scheme, and then switching into a more man scheme. He has the, you know, the versatility. He's like, hey, I've been in a bunch of different defenses. I know how to be multiple, which really I think is a huge thing as a defensive coordinator in the NFL, is really being multiple. Because you can be a this is my way type of defense, but it comes to bite you in the ass in the playoffs. You saw that with Dan Quinn this year with the Cowboys. You saw it with Schwartz and Cleveland. When you just become a this is what we do and we do it good, man, it's just like you got to be a tendency breaking defense. And I think Jerome Henderson would want to bring that.
I mean,
can I ask you something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Jerome Henderson's been down here in Mobile, Alabama. Part of me, this could just be nothing, but part of me thinks that, number one, he's not down here if he knows that there's a chance that he could be gone. If there's a new defense coordinator here, they could decide, I want my own secondary coach. Or he's down here already and so involved, and he was down here and involved last year even after Wink Martindale was hired. Down here and involved so much because he knows he's a defensive coordinator. Do you put any stock into that? Like him being down here?
I guess I hadn't really thought about it. Him being down here is part of it.
Because I think if he knows even there's like, there's a good chance I'm gone, he's probably had those. I mean, it's been so long since the season ended.
I think Dable loves him, though, and yeah. The fact that whoever the defensive coordinator is, that Jerome Henderson's a part of that plan. Now, he has been the most represented. Like, we've seen him on the sidelines more than anybody. Carmen Brasillo, the offensive line coach, has been down. Yeah. But Denard Wilson wasn't hired until last night. And, you know, all the tea leaves point to the Giants wanting Denard Wilson, interviewing him a second time.
Right.
But I think he wanted to go coach with the Titans, right? He thought he viewed that as a better opportunity to start afresh, with a new regime there. So I think Jerome Henderson has been a really good coach, and I would like to see him be a defensive coordinator for the Giants if the guys that we wanted, Denard Wilson and Bobby Babich, aren't available.
I think that we all assumed that when Joe Shane said that we would have an answer by Friday, that it was going to be a two-man race, and one of the men was Denard Wilson, so mm-hmm. we assumed the other was Jerome Henderson. But is it possible that it was because they knew the Titans were the other suitor and that Shane Bowen was a defensive... So
right.
Is it possible that Shane Bowen is the other...
Yeah, I don't want to spend a ton of time speculating because we're going to know soon. Right. But my point being is it sucks that because of everything that's happened, they're not able to get Denard Wilson. And it sucks that the Martindale relationship soured to where he's not the defensive coordinator here, because we view him as a good defensive coordinator. Brian Daboll viewed him as that when he got here, and I think we all view him that at the end, even though the numbers, the total numbers and stuff weren't great. So this is the what you reap when all of this has been so with Wink Martindale and all this, is that Denard Wilson views the Titans as a much better opportunity than the Giants. When if this was 2 years ago, I think Denard Wilson would be weighing his options with the Giants a lot harder. So let's get into the Senior Bowl though. That's what we're down here for. We'll start with the quarterbacks. Came down here thinking about Bo Nix and Michael Penix as maybe options for the Giants in the second round. I don't come out of here wanting either of these guys in the second round, right? And again, Penix, I think, has a better film. But watching Bo Nix down here, I thought he struggled. He had a good day three, but I thought the best plays in day three came in 7-on-7s when there's no pass rush, right? That's not real football, But it's just he looked unsettled. He looked uncomfortable. He had misses, like consistent misses, bad misses on the quick game stuff. He was, had slight inaccuracies. He just looked to me like a quarterback that I just don't want to draft, right? Like he looked like a quarterback that I think Daniel Jones is better than him. And then Michael Penix, I want to go deeper in his film until I give a firm analysis. I thought he looked solid down here. He struggled a little bit on day three, showed good arm talent, but we didn't really get to see him throw it down the field. But I don't come down out of here being excited about either of these guys in the sense that, like, oh, I got to go watch these guys' tape because if it's really good, I want them, right? Where, like, even Malik Willis a couple years ago, he did really well down here, was driving the ball through the rain, making reads, getting stuff out on time, where it's like, I'm excited to go watch this guy's film. And then you watch the film, and like, oh, it's not as good as it was down here. But, hey, there's a lot of talent there. He's young. I just didn't get that from the Senior Bowl practices.
Malik Willis and Bo Nix were starting from two different launching locations when we came down here. Malik Willis had a lot to prove, and he could come in here and impress us. Bo Nix was operating from a higher standpoint, where he was more likely to upset us than he was to impress us. So I understand as someone
who's
just listening to us that like we might be overblowing one guy who's not very good and underselling a guy who might be better than Malik Willis, you know what I mean? But it's because of our expectations. But right now, we are fans of a team that needs a quarterback. So it's not because you want the best quarterback you can get. He doesn't look like that. He doesn't look like the kind of guy that you trade up to get and that you fight other teams for and that you sell your franchise out to.
Well, I don't think he even looks like a quarterback that you take a flyer on in the second round. At that point, like, I just would rather just stick with Daniel Jones for another year if you're not in a position to get a quarterback. And you talked about how, well, we came up with here with higher expectations. Well, Mac Jones came down here, and a few years ago, and he looked really good. Like, it was very clear, okay, this guy is better than the rest. This guy knows how to play quarterback, and, he struggled. He had a good rookie year, and then his career kind of regressed as it went on. But he came down here and looked really good, was pushing the ball down the field, accurate, making plays. Nix didn't look like that at all, right? He looked good in 7-on-7s and made a couple plays in team drills, but really never pushed the ball downfield, was inaccurate. And the only good plays you can find are basically from 7-on-7s and 1-on-1s.
He just throws a good enough ball. He never throws a ball that you're like, whoa, that never happens.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know I'm not really sure.
I come out of this being like, I would rather take Spencer Rattler in the fourth or fifth round than Bo Nix in the second round. Now, I don't want Spencer Rattler in the day three. I don't want to, I really don't want to draft a QB in day three for the most part anyways. But that's where I come out of here from. Like, I think Michael Penix looked good, like good, right? So Penix I feel better about. But Bo Nix, I came out of here pretty disappointed after the buzz that was, you know, there was buzz coming in here of him solidifying himself as a first rounder, and I just did not see that at all.
We saw a lot of throws hit people in the ankles, bounce in the dirt. I mean, these are things not to ignore. So, I mean, I don't, and, you know, you're not wrong. Like, Spencer Rattler looked more consistent. Like, he doesn't look like a better quarterback, but he looks like a guy who you absolutely know what you're going to get from him. So it was just kind of disappointing that Bo Nix was not able to, I don't know, make us feel good about needing a quarterback at six instead of three or two.
That being said, offensive line, I do come out of this, and it hasn't happened always in years. Like, man, there is offensive lineman that I'd be excited about drafting, right? I think it starts with Jackson Powers Johnson, the center out of Oregon, who the Giants met with and talked about moving the guard. A little spoiler for our interview with him. Like, he looked really good. He was controlling reps. He had really good recovery. He didn't practice on day three. He looked really good. UConn guard Christian Haynes, he might have been my favorite player down here. He dominated one-on-ones. He was my favorite player to watch. He controlled blocks with his hands. He had a great base strength. And to have a week at guard where of one-on-ones as clean as him is spectacular. You really don't see a player have a week of one-on-ones be that clean. Like, I shouldn't be able to just recall your bad reps and it'd be that easy, right? He had a bad rep on day one, his first rep at center. He's not a center. They put him at center. He has a bad rep where Braden Fisk, the FSU defensive tackle, just beats him off the snap. It just, like, he was his first time playing center. And then another play at center against Tavondre Sweat, the big nose tackle out of Texas, where, again, it wasn't the worst rep in the world, but he was able to walk him back. And Tavondre Sweat had kind of been bullying everybody else. So I thought he dominated. And then, Justin, there was a guy out of Illinois that you really liked.
Yeah, I mean, Isaiah Adams, guard. The Giants met with him twice, apparently. And, hey, these guys at the Senior Bowl, they're meeting with all these teams, but it was enough where Pat Leonard felt the need to tweet out that he met with the Giants twice, and then also there was a tackle, Roger
Rosengarten, yeah,
from Washington, that the Giants also met with twice. Adams had two really good meetings with the Giants this week. So Isaiah Adams, somebody who I love. His lower body seems strong. Seems like he really works his hands well, technique. Maybe some questions about his upper body strength initially at the point of attack, but I really liked Isaiah Adams, one of the most consistent players in 1v1s all week.
Yeah, and I'll address Roger Rosengarten a little bit because I don't think we talked about him whatsoever on any of the streams or pods or anything that we did. But Washington right tackle, I assume. He was playing strictly right tackle down here. Every 1v1 rep,
that is
every team rep. He was only on the right-hand side. He looks a little bit like leaner for a tackle, I guess. He's a big guy, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't look like overly bulky in the midsection or overly large with arms. He's got some fast feet that look a little undisciplined. They might be seeing like a backup tackle that they could mold if they're seeing anything at all. But mainly when it comes to the trenches, the second team, I don't remember, is that American National?
American.
That was a lot of fun to watch the trenches. The D-line, the O-line, there was a lot of chippiness between them. We saw helmets being ripped off this week, which is awesome from both players.
Yeah, Jordan Jefferson, the LSU defense tackle, rips off Christian Haynes' helmet after he wins in a rep, and Christian Haynes just looks at him like, if you're scared, go to church. If you're scared, go to church. I really like him. I think coming down here, and he was someone when I watched Peyton Wilson and did my film breakdown of Peyton Wilson versus UConn, I was like, who the hell is this guard, man? The way he climbed to the second level is beautiful. And I was like, oh, shit, that's the dude who's going to be down the Senior Bowl, Christian Haynes. I watched him a little bit, and he was on my list of, like, top guys to watch. And he really did not disappoint, where I'm excited about him. You know, I'm going to do a mock draft on March 1st, and I can tell you right now, put him down in Penn. He is going to be in it somehow, some way. And I think the Giants addressing interior early on is going to be a big need. And then, like you said, you had Isaiah Adams out of Illinois, Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon, who the Giants, again, talked to about moving the guard, and he played a little guard down here.
And even good.
Even the tackles, right? Like, even, like, some of the top guys' tackles. You know, Talese Fuaga out of Oregon State, He looked really good, right? He looks like someone who belongs in the first round. Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, he really, really was a stud. And even Christian Jones out of Texas looked like someone who's like worth, you know, a day two pick. And we again, we talked to someone else about the tackle because I was talking offensive line with someone, knows the Giants pretty well. And I said, "Would you think they'd be willing to take one in the second round, thinking about like Tyler Guyton possibly?" Mm-hmm. And he looks at me, he's like, "Second round." He's like, "I think they'd be willing to take him, like take one with the first round." So then we started talking about Olu and Alt and stuff, which again, I'm not even looking at that that sixth pick and like I want to get a tackle there, but I do look at the tackles that are available there and be like, "Hey, I would be okay with that, even though I would rather probably take a wide receiver if they're not getting quarterback." So, but again, like, start taking these tackles a little more serious. Look at them. And, hey, these guys went down here and looked good. To the point, Grump and Justin, what edge came down here and you were impressed with, right? Like, I was trying to put together, an all-defense team for the Senior Bowl. And edge, man, there's really nobody that really impressed. I'd say, Laitalatu, the edge out of UCLA, looked the best. But I thought he even disappointed for what he's supposed to be, right? Like, he's projected to go top 10 right now. Someone that's projected to go top 10 should come down here and kick ass. And he had a good rest, but he did not, you know, look like a dominant type of player, even though he did show the flashes of it. Darius Robinson, the edge out of Mizzou, who they played on the inside a little bit, had some good moments. But, like, again, if you're that 6'5", 287 pounds, I want to see you dominate. And to me, it was just very underwhelming. So, I thought the offensive line kicked ass all week long, which is good news for the Giants.
It was hard to distinguish between who was an edge and who was a D lineman because no one really stood out at edge at all. And
think about the fact of the guys who dropped out, right? Like Cooper Beeb out of Kansas State dropped out. Graham Barton out of Duke dropped out. What's the guy? Troy Fautanu out of Washington all dropped out. I was really disappointed to not have Fautanu with Barton because those are both tackles who I want to see play guard because I think that's their home in the NFL. But nonetheless, like these guys really showed out. And even in team drills, sometimes team drills, offensive line can make it a pain in the ass down here. These quarterbacks had time to do what they wanted to do, and it made the practice viewing a lot
quick little
more
nugget.
Enjoyable.
Darius Robinson, you've been talking about him as an edge, right?
Well, yeah. He's kind of both.
He's played mostly on the edge, and they slid him in a little bit.
Yeah, because he's listed as a defensive lineman this week.
And he's not really got the measurements to be on the edge. Like
he's like a five technique in reality.
Isn't he like a 6'3 guy?
He's 6'5", 287.
6'5", all right. So he's a little bit bigger.
He would most likely play five technique or, you know, a 4-3 defensive end.
I mean, I would say the edges that had some good reps that I remember, Nelson Caesar out of Houston. Chris Braswell every once in a while from Alabama had some. We mentioned Latu from
UCLA.
Brady McGregor played like with some nice energy, but that's kind of like about it. And then your guy, Marshawn Neyland from Western Michigan. That's kind of it.
Yeah, and he didn't get a ton of reps, so we didn't get to see a lot. But so these guys are still the guys we were talking about, Latu and Robinson, are still getting unreal first round hype. They're being projected into like the top 20. I'm not even going to say that they're not going to go there because I don't know about you.
Latu's film is pretty good, right? So I don't want to.
Who else is even in this edge class? Forget the Senior Bowl.
I mean, Jared Verse at FSU is viewed as one.
It's not a deep edge class, it doesn't feel like.
No, and I think there's a lot of talent. I think this is one of the more talented first rounds. I'm not feeling the need to put the top edge and is a top 10 pick or a top 15 pick. You know, I look back at the 2021 draft, which I thought was super talented, and you go look it back at it, and it had a lot of all pros in there. You know, the top edge in that one was Jalen Phillips, I think. Or I guess Micah Parsons, but at the time we viewed him as a stack linebacker. So, Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback out of Toledo, he was the best player down here by far.
By far.
You know, we'll talk about the wide receivers a little bit. Roman Wilson was probably the best wide receiver down here. On day two, they just gave us a Roman Wilson versus Quinyon Mitchell show. And good stuff on Roman Wilson, the Michigan wide receiver. If anyone got to win any wins versus Quinyon Mitchell, it was only him.
Yep.
But it was him and only him. I mean, he dominated every rep. He's got the athleticism. He's got technique. He was killing guys all week long, right? Whether it was vertically, he was jumping quick routes and team drills. He was awesome. So I read an article on Monday, like, oh, this Quinyon Mitchell guy could be a first rounder, and you have no clue who he is because he went to Toledo. And now I'm like, man, this guy's a top. If Emmanuel Forbes went in the top 15, there's no reason why Quinyon Mitchell, because he has the size to be an outside corner. He's got the athleticism. He's got the technique. He is a stud. He had an interception in one-on-ones on Brendan Rice, Jerry Rice's son. He looked like he rose his stock a lot. I really think he's going to be off the board by pick 20.
I don't even feel good comparing him to Emmanuel Forbes because I like him so much more than Forbes.
What I'm saying is Emmanuel Forbes went top 15. I
know.
Then there's no reason that he shouldn't be.
No, not at all. And like you said, only one guy really got the better of him. I thought that Ricky Pearsall as a wide receiver is somebody down here that really kind of made a fool of a lot of the defensive backs, and he struggled very hard against Kenyon Mitchell. I think at one point he even took him to the ground. But in general, I thought that there was a lot of impressive corners down here as well. They leagues below Kenyon Mitchell, but we got to see a lot of good corner play down here as well.
You know what's crazy? If the order is reversed, like let's just say this year's draft class is last year's draft class, and we're picking at, where were we picking at? What, 24?
25, and then we trade up 24.
25, and we feel like we need to trade up for 24. If that pick is Quinyon Mitchell, I'm singing.
Oh.
Singing.
Yeah, again, I got to watch his film and all that shit, but he looked like a beast out here,
I'm starting to get sold on the fact, like, if you're a corner and you're just an insane. I mean, this was the research that really you did on Quinyon Mitchell before you came here.
And these drills are built against corners, by the way, too.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. These drills, a lot of these drills, the 1v1 drills that we were talking about with O-line, D-line are built against offensive linemen, yet the last 2 years that O-linemen have looked really good down here. But I'm starting to get, like, with corners, if you're just an insane athlete, you know, you see this with, who's that guy from Seattle? 2 years ago.
Tariq Castro.
Tariq Woolen.
Woolen.
Oh, Woolen, sorry.
You know, Woolen just ran like a deer and an athlete, 99th percentile in arm length, 99th percentile in 40-yard dash. If you're an athlete and you can, like, and I'm talking like really top-tier athlete, and you can sort of play football, it's like, I think you're just going to be a good corner. And Mitchell fell into that list before we came down here to Mobile, backed it up this week, and he was really comfortable in both man, like 1v1 drills, that's like solely man coverage, and then really, really comfortable in zone too, like fading back and then coming up and playing the intermediate part of the field whenever the ball went up there, feeling whenever there's somebody in front of him, okay, I passed my man to the guy behind me, now I'm going to come up and cover. So I thought Quinyon Mitchell had a really good feel in zone and obviously dominated the 1v1 stuff. The only time that he got beat by Roman Wilson, Quinyon Mitchell slipped.
Yeah.
It's the only time that he got beat this week.
Yeah, and Wilson, like, and again, Roman Wilson looked really good. He dominated on day one, and day two, they just put him on Kenyon Mitchell, and Mitchell stepped up to that. You mentioned Ricky Pearsall, and I guess we can close a little bit on this before we just kind of list some names, because we're hitting some time. Xavier Leggett, Justin, the South Carolina wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about him on Monday, about possibly being the star of this show, and I thought he looked good, but he did not shine in a way that you'd want, right? Even if it was overreaction, you wanted there to be talk about him being, you know, into the first round, right? Even if it was overreaction, I don't think you come away from that saying this at all. Now, I still thought he made some tough catches, high-pointing the ball, using his hands. I thought his releases were good. I thought there was some good stuff as far as route running, but you just didn't see the speed, the quickness to really separate from guys, where he was kind of stuck having to make some contested catches when facing man coverage. And the quarterbacks also didn't give them very many opportunities to go up and make plays because, one, there were some inaccuracies down the field, and when they actually did push the ball down the field in team drills, they actually just didn't push the ball downfield in team drills.
No, they did not. Here's the thing with Leggett, is that the first day that we were down here, we were like, ah, this is it? That kind of stinks. Like, we had a lot of plays where he would, like, get a little bit of separation, then the corner would be able to close on him because he didn't continue that separation. He wasn't making contested catches that first day. Second day, a little bit better, right? He he wasn't winning on the reps with crazy separation or anything like that, but he was completing the play. He was making the catches along the sideline. They weren't easy catches. The biggest disappointment for me had nothing to do with either of those. The biggest disappointment was that we didn't see him today.
Mm.
I think he was dealing with like an ankle or something. Someone commented on the video. So
okay. I mean, it still stinks, right? Because we had one day we were really disappointed in him, and another day that we didn't come away yesterday being like, he had a great day today. We were like, all right, so we started to see some things, and then nothing day three kind of just leaves an emptiness mm-hmm. feeling to the week for me with him. And we're in an offensive scheme with Brian Daboll that is able to get a lot out of forcing separation and things like that. And with the value pick that I think that you're going to end up where Leggett is going to fall, I think he's going to fall in the draft. I think you can just get somebody more useful for your offense.
Yeah, I don't think he's a great fit for the Giants, but I'll ask you this. Who had a better Senior Bowl week, Xavier Leggett or Rashee Rice? Because I think Leggett by a good amount. And Rashee Rice was kind of in the same situation last year. We're coming in with a bunch of hype. We saw Rashee Rice get worked a good amount of times down here last year.
No, I mean, I'll even throw it back at you with this. NFL draft, sure, you can answer that question, but, I mean, this is talking Giants. Rashee Rice kind of proved last year, and people were even saying about him heading into the Senior Bowl, kind of like how do you describe a spectacular catch guy? Mm. Where, like, he's a guy that's 6'1", 6'2", or whatever, but he plays like he's 6'4", 6'5", like he's a possession contested catch wide receiver. I don't think that's where the Giants are going. Like, I think I asked you guys, this was in the pre-stream, pre-recap show, whatever. What's Leggett's game? What's his trump card? And Bobby, I think the phrase that you used is like, oh, he's like a spectacular catch guy. And when I hear that, with this new Giants regime, maybe the old one with Garrett, I'd be like, yeah, sure, let's go for it. But with this new Giants regime, if you're relying on those contested catches, spectacular catches, I think you're out.
Yeah, I think Ladd McConkey, Zach, Ricky Pearsall, Roman Wilson, all those guys who probably are viewed in like the same range are all more important, bigger than them. Even like, Tulane, Jaquan Jackson. So before we kick it into the interview, why don't we each go one, just talk about one guy briefly that we didn't mention. I'll start with you, Justin.
I was going to have Grumfried and Ann. I almost wanted to go up and down the roster and just name names.
No. Okay, Grump, read an ad, and then Justin, just tell me, give me this one last guy you want to talk about for your team.
A lot of
coverage.
Guys, man.
Yeah, I got to do one. That's why it's fun.
Talk to us about Mando.
Read us an ad.
Grump. Introducing Mando from the makers of Loom Deodorant. Mando Whole Body Deodorant is the all-terrain vehicle of deodorants. It goes everywhere, over speed bumps at 35 miles an hour. Put it on your pits, package, feet, skin folds, back, knees, everywhere. Because body odor does happen all over your body, not just on your pits. So you need to get deodorant that you can safely put all over your body.
That includes your balls, by the way.
Excuse me?
And your knees.
Your balls, like ball deodorant.
I said package.
Yeah, well, I mean, I actually did have I have this product.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I've used it on my balls.
So I actually used to go to the gym very early in the morning mm-hmm. and take a shower before I went to my day job. And if you ever take a shower with hot water really quickly and then get out, you still kind of sweat a mm-hmm. little bit. So I was like, I don't want to. So I had like regular deodorant. And I started doing this thing where I was putting like a little bit on my forehead. And I told people at work about it. I was like, I don't know why. And they were like, I don't think that's healthy. This is healthy to put on all over your body. I stopped doing that, by the way. But now I can get deodorant that I can do that. So special offer now. New customers will get $5 off of a starter pack with our exclusive code and link. Use code GIANTS at shopmando.com. That's shopmando.com. As a special offer for listeners, new customers get $5 off a Mando starter pack with this code GIANTS at shopmando.com. That equates to 40% of your starter pack when you visit shopmando.com and use code GIANTS.
You'll be glad you did.
You'll be glad that you did.
I was going to see if Grump was going to say you'll be glad you did by yourself.
No.
All right, Justin, one player.
Bo Limmer.
Talk about him.
From Arkansas, interior offensive lineman. He is listed at 6'4", 301 pounds, 31.5-inch arms. Bo Limmer, man, he was a nasty, nasty player for the American team this week. He was also one of the only players out of both practices, this includes guards and tackles, to really utilize a hop step, which I know if you're an offensive line report watcher, you know, you've heard Bobby Skinner talk about that for years now. So Bo Limmer brought that nastiness that you want in the interior offensive line, had some good technical stuff to his game too. One of the only guys to go toe-to-toe with Devondre Sweat through this week, through all 3 days. Unfortunately, didn't see them go 1v1 the third day. That's probably why Sweat had his best day today, just saying. So Bo Limmer, a guy that definitely wasn't on my radar, I'm really excited to go back, watch more of him, and see if the game film matches what he showed this week on the practice field.
Grump.
It's really tough because I think a lot of guys really jumped out, but one guy that we haven't mentioned that I think might get some draft buzz in the coming weeks, especially after this week, is Tulane wide receiver Jaquan Jackson. Shifty little guy. He gets a lot of separation, and we kind of said that he reminds us of like this year's version of Tank Dell. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, I think, because
there's a short king every year. I thought Jaquan Jackson was that this year.
Yeah.
Tank Dell light.
But Tank Dell elevates. He may be a short guy, but yeah, he can play big. We didn't see him play big, Jaquan Jackson, but we did see him get very open. He had a lot of explosive plays. He would get deep as well. I thought that he was a lot of fun to watch this week, and I think that we're going to see him rise in the coming
years. My observation on Jaquan Jackson is that I didn't record a ton of wide receiver DB 1v1s this week, but the ones that I did, I moved my camera the fastest when Jaquan Jackson was running. Yeah, I was like, whoa, I'm flying right now with this camera.
He was so fun to watch that he was actually going to be my guy, but Grump stole him. So what I'll do is Carlton Johnson, the cornerback out of Fresno State. Now, I feel a little bad saying this one because he's 170 pounds, and to me that's just not really what I want right now for the Giants, especially as we try and get our DBs better in the run defense. But he did play awesome down here. There wasn't a lot of interceptions in team drills. Carlton Johnson had one on the first day, did a great job on the backside of a progression, cutting off an in route. I had that, right? And then day two, right, I was watching him in 1-on-1, so I was like, man, this dude's just fast. Like, he flies. And then they put the speeds up the next day. It was topping out. Like, he had the fastest time, over 22 miles per hour. And then day three really dominated. I think if Kenyon Johnson didn't have the day that he, you know, the week that he did had, I think Carlton Johnson, or Quinyon Mitchell didn't have the week that he had, I think Carlton Johnson might have been getting some of that hype. Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 from the Senior Bowl
includes Marshawn Nealon at 49.
What? How do you like that?
Peyton Wilson at 47. Check. He was going to be the one if one of my guys. Check out the breakdown of him. All right. We did an interview with Jackson Powers Johnson, the offensive lineman out of Oregon, probably the best offensive lineman down here. So check that out. But please stay for after the interview because we're going to say some things that we want you to hear.
And Jackson Powers Johnson was fresh off his interview with the Giants.
Come on, pay attention in there. Let's go. We got a beautiful day. Work. Play fast. Play fast. Whoa.
Ah. All right, we're here with Oregon center Jackson Powers Johnson down here at the Senior Bowl. Jackson, first thing, we want to dive right into it. What are you, like, looking to prove down here? Is it, like, showing off some of your strength or maybe saying, like, going at a perceived weakness that, you know, teams have talked to you about?
No, definitely showing what I've done all year. Kind of cementing that, and also that, you know, as a junior, being a one-year starter, that I can, you know, do great against the best competition here and prove to GMs that I'll be the first center off the board.
Is there any player that you've, like, kind of seen down here that you look at as, like, the best competition to go against or a guy you've played in the past that you, like, really have a pride in winning that matchup?
You know, there's a lot of great guys here and a lot of great talent. You know, you had the Outland Trophy, you know, DeAndre Swift, and then you know, there's a lot of other great D linemen too, and you know, it'll be fun to go against, you know, some of my old teammates like you know, Brandon Dorless and, you know, Evan Williams at safety. So there's a lot of great guys down here, and I'm excited for the competition.
One on ones are set against the offensive linemen, right? So it's not even always about the result. What is something like? What is your mindset going into that? Is it like getting, you know, quick hands on the start of the rep? Like what is your mindset of like showing off in that, in those, besides, you know, finishing it good?
Definitely just physicality within the, you know, the set, getting your hands on a guy and, you know, keeping you between the quarterback, just the biggest thing that you got to do.
Now, we've been here for 2 days. This is going to be the first day of practice. Kind of take us through, because obviously a lot of the fans, like, we've never been in a meeting with an NFL team. You met with 16 yesterday. Take us through, like, What were those meetings like? How were you feeling? What were some questions? What were some common themes of a lot of those meetings that you had with those teams?
You know, those teams, you know, they've seen your play, they've seen your tape, and mm-hmm. now it's just, you know, who you are as a person, you know, where you grew up, you know, siblings, you know, mom and dad, just kind of stuff like that, you know, just getting the background on you, and just kind of similar questions to that, just, you know, where'd you grow up, you know, how many siblings did you have, what sports did you play growing up, and I got a lot of good ones for sure. You know, I ballroom dance growing up a little bit, so I surprised a little bit of teams on that one.
You were even singing before we were starting. Did you get any kind of inclination that, like, hey, I met with this team and maybe this team knows a little bit more about me than some other teams, so maybe they're interested? Did you get any kind of inkling, or were teams kind of holding cards close to the chest like that?
I mean, most of the teams are going to play, you know, close to the chest. I mean, there's a lot of guys here and they're doing a lot of interviews. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had a lot of great interactions with everybody. You know, I met, you know, a lot of great people, and it was a good talk and a good time.
You mentioned being the first center off the board. Has anyone talked to you about, you know, sliding over to guard if needed? Is that something that you're open to, or you just want to be center?
You know, I'll play anything. I played guard in college, and definitely talking with those guys, you know, last night, they talked about playing guard as well, and I'd slide over for sure, and I'll get a couple reps here at the Senior Bowl at guard.
The Giants, we cover the Giants specifically. They drafted a center out of here last year in John Michael Schmitz. Were they one of the teams that talked to you about guard possibly?
Yeah, for sure. No, they talked to me big on guard. You know, they showed me center film and kind of went through my center film. And then, you know, they asked about if I could play guard. And I said, you know, I'm a guy that can flex different positions. And they wanted to see me kind of play a little bit of guard today, so I will.
We talked to a lot of offensive linemen. And one of my favorite questions to ask them is, what is your favorite run concept? Is it getting out and pulling, you know, duo? What is your favorite run concept that you like to run?
I think good old-fashioned inside zone, just whatever, you know, football started out as, you know, just the meat and potatoes, physicality, go right up the gut.
Is there a certain play that, like, you recall where it's like, this is the play, if anyone asks me to show me my tape that I have against, you know, whatever team?
I'd say probably Washington State. It was like this reverse, and I wasn't really supposed to pull out there, but it just kind of came out that I was pulled around. I was like 20, 30 yards downfield, and, you know, blew up the corner. So I think that was a good one.
Those are the most fun plays when you can just crack someone, whether it's on the sideline or wherever. Just you know, get that, like you said, 30 yards down the field. That was Washington State this year?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to have to go find that. We'll find that clip.
It's a good one.
What do you think you need to improve on the most going to the next level?
I definitely just pad level. That's a big one for me. Pad level bending, you know, flexibility and mobility. I think I'm, you know, good on power and strength. Just getting mobile. Be a big yoga guy. So,
3++ traits. Like, if you had to just describe who you are as a player, what are those three traits that you kind of go right to?
Physical, nasty, and passionate. Yeah. I think this, you know, football's supposed to be played physical. And that's how everybody's intended it to be, and that's just the player I am.
Super Bowl is Chiefs 49ers. What is your pick for that game?
It's really hard to bet against the Chiefs. You know, they have a lot of experience there, but I think it'd be also great to see the 49ers win. I think I want the 49ers to win, and just kind of selfishly, because I had family grow up there in San Francisco, but I think the Chiefs will pull it out. I think it's hard to beat Pat Mahomes in the playoffs.
Non-quarterback MVP pick.
Non-quarterback MVP pick. I think for each team, I think you're going to see like a, you know, Travis Kelce for sure. And if the 49ers win, Christian McCaffrey.
I want to get Trent Williams that, right, as an offensive lineman.
Shoot, I would too, but, you know, we live in a world where that's just not going to happen.
We got to have them use him in that surge motion a few times like they've done in the past and just, like,
they
score
need to
touchdowns.
Throw him a ball. They throw him a ball.
Exactly.
There we go.
So we got to throw Trent Williams the ball, right, tackle eligible play, and just use him in surge motion down at the goal line.
Hey, make
line.
Sure he reports to the refs.
And I will try and get my, you know, my little bit of clout going, like Trent Williams, Super Bowl MVP. Yeah. Have Brandon Thorne and all those guys.
Are we all for you? So the Giants did this a couple times this year. Mark Lewinsky put him in pre-snap motion. We just saw it with the Lions. They put Penei Sewell. Well, Penei Sewell's just an amazing athlete. Pre-snap motion. Are we in favor for putting linemen pre-snap motion, getting them ahead of steam, and just blowing people up?
Are we
in favor for that?
Yeah, no. I think that's starting up. I think they're going to start using that more because you got to use – if you guys use guys who can run, big guys in space, I mean, it's – it's tough to defend that. So I think they'll keep on doing that.
Until you've seen me in space, and then it's easy to defend. Is there a player that you watched growing up or currently in the NFL, an offensive lineman that not you emulate their game at, but you just really like watching them play?
I'd say Ryan Jensen. You know, he's a bad man. He's physical. He's tough. He's a prick on the field. So that's who I kind of emulate my game after.
So you like being like I feel like centers have to be like the guys going to the, you know, defend the quarterback mm-hmm. at the
yes,
end of the play. So
yeah,
I like
no.
that. Bo Nix is down here, your quarterback.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything like that stands out about him that if, you know, other teams asked you, like, hey, why should we draft him at quarterback, that really stands out for you?
You know, Bo brings so much to the table as a quarterback. You know, he's got a great arm. You know, he's smart. He's played the game for a while. You know, 85 years in college, as I say. But not more than that. He just brings so much to a program and an organization. You know, he's going to impact your program. He's going to get in there. He's going to, you know, fit with the team. And, you know, he's going to be a guy who's going to work on the community, too. He's just that type of guy.
Yeah. Nice. One more. Most intimidating away stadium you've played in college?
Oh, that's a tough one. Ohio State was a good one. But I'm going to say the guys up north in Washington, you know, that was a good one. They sold it out. It was college game day. That was the loudest I played in. So definitely the guys up there, you know, rocking the Huskies.
All right, man. We appreciate you jumping on for us, and good luck this week.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Hey, Sula, you better hope I never get back in there. I will kick your ass. Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs and have some fun.
All right. Thank you, Jackson Powers Johnson, for coming on the show. Maybe you'll be on the Giants soon. All right, that's our Senior Bowl coverage for this year. Very fun. Year four of doing it. I want to actually thank the Senior Bowl. They hooked it up this year for us, right? Like, and not because we asked. They literally just offered it to us. One, they gave us Radio Row access, which allowed us to do all these interviews. And we took advantage of that. Monday morning, 6 a.m., it was us. It was ESPN Radio, and it was local Mobile, Alabama radio, which I honestly really wanted to jump on with because I love local. I love just local news. I find it fascinating for some reason. So we were able to get a bunch of interviews done. That's how we got Michael Penix and Joe Milton, and then I think we're going to roll out some of these interviews on like on Sundays on the Talking Giants channel because they're not going to do great numbers, so we just figure we throw them on Sundays. So that, and they gave us access that only like maybe 8 or 9 organizations had.
There were at least 9 booths
where we had internet. We had our own table. No one was allowed in it. You know, like it was like literally the New York Giants and then us, right? Mm-hmm. Right next to them, right? Which was very funny to be like, hey, yeah, you guys got some access, so do we.
And let me tell you something about that. Like, as the years have gone on, this is my 3rd year of coming down here. This is your 4th, right, Bobby? Every year that I've been down here so far, I've looked at that area and said, damn, what do we have to do to get in there? Because I saw that people would be streaming, they'd be recording. I loved the idea of being, oh, fuck, look at that awesome backdrop with the field. It's like you're there. And I really wanted to have that. And the fact that we had it and we were able to upload stuff so much quicker, we were able to stream so much faster and actually stream from the actual practice field. So hopefully, you know, even with all the Mobile, Alabama wind and the stadium sounds, he got to hear it all. I was really thrilled and blown away with it, and especially the whole internet thing of being able to upload that video the same day and not have to worry about it the next day. I loved it, man. So thank you to the Senior Bowl. Thank you to Jim Nagy. Thank you to our girl Molly for really hooking it up.
Yeah,
all
Jim Nagy, Molly Middleton, they all were awesome. So, and thank you guys. This is our most fun trip of the year. We work a lot in it, but it's like really enjoyable. We get to go down there, hang out with people we like. And then just watch ball. I think that's what's like everyone there is like, oh, are you guys going to come to the combine? But the combine is like,
that's not ball.
It's all about talking with reporters and people on teams and media and stuff. Here is where I feel like we're most in our element because it's just ball, right? Mm-hmm. You need to have a million inside sources. You're not looking for info. You're just looking here, watching ball, talking about ball. So I love it. Grump, we're going to put his YouTube channel links in the description. Your 3rd year down here with us, you are very valuable for us to come down here. So I want to say thank you. As always, I'm excited to have you down here with us next year because it really helps. Like it's one is a second set of eyes. Me and you are talking the whole time, getting stuff, you know, notes off of each other. So I want to say thank you to for coming down here with us again.
Thank you for inviting me. I this is my favorite thing. You know, I had a moment today This was having that access that you were talking about and just sitting and talking ball. And now the third year, we're starting to network. Like, seeing this, hey, how you been? Like, you know what I mean? It's cool seeing these guys, you know, every year now and having those conversations. And had a moment today. We work a lot, and we were doing our thing in that little area there. And then we got all done, and I turn around and literally saw the sun setting on the stadium on, like, the last day here. And it's sad because it happens so fast. Down here for like the whole week, but we really are moving and doing stuff the whole time. And by the time we get back and we're just exhausted and shot, it's always sad when I leave here. This really is like my football home away from home. And I'm really glad that you guys bring me down
Alabama.
Here.
Yeah. So thank you to Alabama too. Just love this state. It's always great to be here. So thank you guys. Make sure, you know, you'd like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Check out Grump's channel. Any final words before we get out of here and head back? I head back to Florida. You guys head back to Jersey. What's wrong with you guys?
I had some parting
Justin,
words.
I may see you in 2 weeks. May.
If not, then you may see me in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That could happen, too. All right. So we will see you guys maybe with the defensive coordinator. Maybe we'll put this out Friday morning and defensive coordinator will be hired and we'll be really annoyed at the timing of that. We'll see. Until then, let's go Big Blue.
Tomboy Media has a new teammate. It's iHeart Podcasts. What does it mean? Tomboy Media shows can now be found over at the Dan Patrick Show. That's right. How cool is that? Wake and Jake and Jimmy's Three Things have joined the iHeart Podcast and Dan Patrick Show family. And the best part, they'll still continue to be the same shows you know and love. If you couldn't tell, we're excited about this one, and thank you guys for listening.